It's what, 40 degrees, so there's no heat wave. But there is when we hear great music like that. Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. Martha Reeves is getting her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame today. Right. So we'll celebrate Martha Reeves with the wonderful music throughout our program. You can check in and find out what we played and when. Playlists at WAMC.org/roundtable. Just go to WAMC.org/roundtable, and the playlist will be there. All right. Good morning. Welcome. It is 14 minutes past 9 o'clock on this 27th day of March. A lot to discuss. We will get right to it and figure out, what's happening in our world. And it's hard to do that, but we'll do it. I'm sure it'll all work out. We have a wonderful group to assist. Let us get started in introducing them. Dean of College of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Bob Griffin joins us. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, Joe. Great to be back. Joe, today is actually a really important day for you.
Yeah?
It is National Joe Day.
Oh.
So it's celebration of everything that is Joe. So if you're writing in, and we certainly urge you to, make sure you you recognize that it's not just National Joe Day, it's National Joe Donahue Day, as far as we're concerned.
It's. I think this is mainly a makeup for the fact that we're usually referred to as the average Joe.
It being a Bob, I completely understand.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I think it just may be making that up for that. But thank you for bringing that to my attention. That'll put a little skip in my step. Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration, Jim Handler.
Morning, Joe.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. And congratulations on Joe Day. We don't seem to have a James Day, so I don't know.
No. No, not that I'm aware of. But I didn't know there was a Joe Day. So
I was going to say, my mom, having been an English teacher for many years, by the three kids are James, William, and Elizabeth.
All good solid names, yeah. Right? We welcome director, actor, educator, and co-founder and former artistic director of Wham Theater, Kristen Van Genhoven. Good morning, Kristen. How are you?
I am very good, and more importantly than Joe Day, although that is very important, all of my colleagues out there will know that today is actually International Theater Day. So,
you missed that one, Bob.
Yep. Yeah. I was so surprised. I really thought that you would get that, especially with me on today. You noticed my haircut, but you didn't recognize that it was World Theater Day. So there's a beautiful message about art as peace on the World Theater Day website. I wish all of my hardworking, passionate, dedicated theater colleagues out there a really beautiful World Theater Day. Keep up the creative work. What you're doing saves humanity and is so necessary. So happy World Theater Day to all of us out there who are keeping the flame burning for art is peace, which is the message of this year's person who wrote the message, which is John Fosse from Norway, a Norwegian writer and playwright.
And a pretty wonderful message at that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get started with topics of the day. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, if you'd like to get in on the fun. Panel at WAMC.org and hear from you on what you have to say. I do want to, we started with this yesterday, we'll start with it today, and that is the update on the bridge disaster in Baltimore, Maryland, that impacted the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And since I think yesterday, well, it was still a relatively new story as we were talking about it, probably many of you, if not all of you, have seen the dramatic footage of the impact of the bridge, and of course the aftermath as well, which is really very strong and concerning. And now we are in this process of figuring out what happened, as well as to see, give us a timeline of events. Unfortunately, there was a search for six missing in the bridge disaster. That search has been called off by the Coast Guard simply because the chance of them living, being alive after that and being in that water and that cold water, and also just whatever condition they were in when they entered the water, that they are no longer doing an active search. Officials say the construction workers had been missing too long to hope for rescue. They were on the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore when a cargo ship rammed into it after losing power. The Coast Guard ended that search on Tuesday, a few minutes before the cargo ship Dali crashed into, that's D-A-L-I, Painter, not Carol Channing, even though it's Theater Day, crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge early Tuesday. The vessel had a complete blackout that knocked out power to the engine and navigation equipment, according to an industry official. The official, Clay Diamond, the executive director of the American Pilots Association, said Tuesday that he had been speaking regularly with the Association of Maryland Pilots and that the cause of the system failure was unclear, though the ship's backup generators had kicked on, restoring some power. The propulsion system remained on offline. So I go to Bob Griffin as to what we should make of the story. I guess there's many different directions we can go in on this, but getting a real handle on exactly what happened, I think, is first and foremost.
Yeah, and I heard the interview this morning with the head of the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board. They actually had investigators already on the ship. You know, there are a couple issues that I want to sort of throw out and see where the panel and some of the folks at home listening want to go. The nature of that bridge is incredibly important to our national economy. I mean, I don't think we really understand or appreciate how much cargo is brought into this country on an unlimited number of ports, places like Baltimore, places like Long Beach, L.A.,
Boston. Boston.
Boston, although Boston is relatively small compared to the port of New York and certainly Baltimore, the bridge itself was also a key transportation link, particularly for hazardous materials in and around the D.C. area, Joe. So this bridge going down affects the trade by ship and container ship. But it also, it's going to mess up the transportation grids, and the area around the national the national capital region, Washington D.C., is going to be hugely impacted because they're going to have to figure out how they're going to route hazardous materials which flow through every day.
Well, and this is on top of just regular traffic snarls. I mean, anyone who has spent any time in or out of the Beltway and has tried to get from one end of the city to the other, whether it be to Baltimore, to Maryland, Annapolis, Washington, D.C., and Virginia, that's just a nightmare.
It's going to have ripple effects up and down the whole 95 corridor, and people are drawing, I think, sort of a false comparison between the 95 bridge in Philadelphia,
right,
that sort of dropped and they were able to get it back in, I thought, record time. This is going to be a much more difficult rebuild.
Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, made the announcement yesterday. He said, while we are proud of that accomplishment, that cannot be replicated here.
Not at all. And you know, I need to take a sort of a side note and just compliment Secretary Buttigieg. He has become sort of, in my mind, the go-to voice of reason during a lot of these disasters. I was disappointed. I think this is an opportunity where I thought Secretary Mayorkas could have stepped up from Homeland Security, given the role of the Coast Guard, but But Buttigieg has really become sort of, in my mind, one of the more important members of the Biden administration in ways that we normally don't see with transportation. He this morning said some interesting things about how we have to design our infrastructure for resilience. And this is something that Biden was successful in getting woven into the infrastructure bill. Because it just shows you how vulnerable our critical infrastructure is. The bridge didn't have bumpers on it, bumpers in the sense of supports that could have better protected the stanchions that were holding the bridge up, which is why you saw this sort of catastrophic domino effect failure, which is going to have to be, I would argue, redesigned out of the next bridge. And they're having a lot of experience doing that with better engineering, better materials, especially as they're looking at the seismic activities in the Northwest and in California, and they're redesigning some key bridges. So there's goodness that we can build off of this really bad story. A couple thoughts about container ships, Joe, which is a minor passion for me. So this shows you how weird I am. When the bridge was designed in the 60s and 70s, it was designed around a container ship that could have approximately 3,000 containers. The new mega container ships are starting to run in the 18 to 21 thousand. Okay, so we're talking about ships that are so fundamentally different than anything that we have seen in the past that it's driving a whole sort of port war around the world, because there's only a certain number of ports that can actually handle these vessels, and where everything is so linked. And we saw after COVID, you know, the what happens when the supply chain goes down. But you're talking about a vessel that is so massive that I'm not sure how they're going to be able to design around the force of a vessel like that, and the vessels are going to continue to grow. So you've got the issue of trade, you get the issue of hazardous materials, you get the issue of transportation. You know, again, notwithstanding, I'm not ignoring the terrible loss of life, and I wouldn't be surprised to find that more lives have been lost as the research goes on.
So I don't mean to be flip in this in any way, shape, or form, but let me ask you the question. It seems as though while these large ships were getting larger and larger, was there not some conversation to say, what happens if, ... What happens, and because we're looking at a very new type of container ship that is big and huge and heavy, and how does that navigate around the bridges and the infrastructure, which can often be creaky at best in the United States of America.
And I think you put your finger right on it. My response to that is that this is about 35 years of neglect of our infrastructure that's showing here. And it's not that people didn't think about it, but when you have more imminent needs, when you have bridges that are actually in worse condition, when you have tunnels that are in worse condition, that we just didn't put the money into the infrastructure. I'll go back to my other comment, though. I'm again, without a complete redesign, it would have been, I'm not sure we could have prevented this accident from occurring. And I think that's going to be the challenge of what they do to put this back up as quickly as they can.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, I hate to say something about something where we've lost lives, but oh, what could have happened? Because first of all, the ship was able to radio to shore. The cops closed off the bridge. In fact, they were getting ready to go get those six guys off the bridge when it collapsed. That bridge carries school buses.
Yeah.
That bridge carries. So 1:30 in the morning was lucky, just simply because that's a low traffic time for that bridge. But you know, during the day, that bridge carries a significant amount of stuff. And as Bob says, the The other way you get through Baltimore is through a long tunnel. And that tunnel has a lot of restrictions. There are two tunnels, but it gets complicated talking about all that. But the route around that is going to now have to be used by anything carrying materials that can't go through the tunnel or that's too large for the tunnel is going to be staggering. The other thing is it's worth noting that the Port of Baltimore is where most automobiles come into the U.S.
On the East Coast.
For the East Coast. And actually for a lot of East and Middle. But most of these container ships have been carrying huge numbers of cars and things like that. So this is also going to hit, a supply chain issue in a lot of the that kind of thing. They're already trying to figure out how they're going to route all the containers already on the way to somewhere else where they can offload them, because there aren't that many places that are set up for, as Bob says, this size ship, but also specifically for automotive things. Apparently, you need some, I was reading up on this, you need some specialized stuff. The other thing, both Bob and I, and him much more than I, have worked with the first responders down in the D.C. area. I used to work with some of the divers who, in their time off, we used to dive in the aquarium and feed the fish and have a lot of fun. But then they would talk about, their work. And so some of these guys, they would be woken up at 1:30 in the morning, throw on a dry suit, because that's awfully cold water. Very dangerous place to dive. We dove around some of those piers in very good weather. They took me to see what they did. So it's a scary situation. So you've not only got the people who've fallen in, you've got the people who are trying to respond to it, and now you're going to have all that rerouting. So this is a much bigger deal than it. A bridge collapsing always is a big deal.
No, but
the fact that not so many people were killed will make it go away quickly.
Let's pause there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your input. Panel at WAMC.org. First news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. A great group assembled, Bob Griffin, Jim Hendler, and Kristen Van Genhoven. I want to go over to Kristen in just a second. I want to give just a couple of facts. The Washington Post has done an outstanding job, I think, in showing graphs of giving you an idea of the size of the ship and the water and of the passageway that it went through compared to what it should have gone through. About 50 feet of water is from where the ship would have been at the bottom, and then up 50 feet of water to the point where the ship is floating. 200 feet from that bottom point all the way up to the top, and the 185 feet is the clearance at the point of the ship's impact. So that gives you some idea of what you're dealing with. And the loaded weight expected to be around 100,000 tons, which is just astronomical. Kristen.
Yeah, that's why I think what Bob said about it would have been very difficult to avoid when the bridge was built and what it was built to withstand versus how shipping containers and ships have progressed over that 35 years. It's no matter what they would have done, it's of course the media cycle of what's happening of who was at fault and making, giving us the info. It's such a typical media cycle of how we're going to address this. But I do agree that hopefully that message can come through that regardless of, what may have. Of course, it's important to investigate the ship and investigate their protocols and their policies and how much they did their pre-shipping checks and everything. And of course, it's important to talk about the bridges and the state of, and this is a great affirmation for what the Democratic Party has been saying about the state of America's infrastructure. And so far, in large part due to Pete Buttigieg, who I agree is doing an excellent job, the message is very clear. The message is concise. It's clear. It's focused on the policies that this government wants to have around America's infrastructure. It will hopefully be a great example to gain support to continue. You know, the bill was bipartisan. This is one issue where we can hope that everyone's going to move forward together. So those are, I think, very important ripple effects that will come out of this. I, you know, was really struck by the information that I was reading around what the media is starting to report about the crew of the ships and the hours that they were working. And is this another case of corporate greed where corners were being cut so that, you know, more product could get shipped? And there's so many examples of this around the world, which are all resulting in so much disruption. We just talked about the importance of this particular bridge for our national economy, our global economy, not to mention that area and all of the families who are trying to figure out how they're going to get to work. And then, of course, most importantly, the six question mark families whose lives have been altered forever by losing those people who were working. And that, to me, is hopefully what we're going to be focused on. I take your point, Jim, about, like, there hasn't been, quote unquote, enough loss of life for this to stay in the top of the media news chain. But hopefully the Democratic Party, the folks that are invested in America's infrastructure, can keep the message top of mind, and that this will encourage a bipartisan ongoing commitment to rebuilding, renewing, re-strengthening, with that resilience, America's infrastructure.
Just a couple of the factoids about the area. It's very tidal, so the currents are incredibly strong. That's why they had local. They actually have local pilots that have to bring these boats in, because there can be no expectation that foreign crews would understand the intricacies of the tidal basin there. Which also, I think, gets to Jim's point about how difficult it was for divers at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, getting into frigid cold water in the dark, and then trying to find, you know, almost a proverbial needle in a haystack. The other thing about the area, for folks that don't know it, is that these are very, very well equipped, very capable counties. They run more of a county system than we do here in New York, or certainly in Massachusetts. So you have the city of Baltimore, which is, you know, in itself a large organization, but the counties that were responding in from Maryland, they're really well equipped. They're very professional. They're well trained. With that said, though, nobody has a dive team that's just sitting around at 1 o'clock in the morning waiting to respond. So you actually have to call them out. So there's delays, the sort of innate delays that are built into a response like this, which make it really difficult when you're thinking about the effects of the water on the human body and the survivability.
You always hope, and. It should just be routine. And yet, in our recent politic, it has not been. But yesterday, we at least saw all parties coming together.
We did. Well, and with compassion and empathy, which we don't always see as well. And that was really...
I would love to agree with you, but anybody... And I'm not going to repeat some of the stupid things that were said, but... Anybody who wishes to might want to look at what some of the early Fox News commentators.
Oh, were I don't doing mean that. I mean the people, into... the representatives of the district, whether
oh,
they
yes,
be Republicans
yes, that's
or
right,
Democrats.
Sure. Yes, that's right.
This is a main area for the District of Columbia to get people in and out, and they are all lockstep.
The mayor, the governor, the Coast Guard,
the representatives,
the
senators,
and the president.
Yes, very much so. Mm-hmm. And that is what I meant. No, I'm not talking about the fringe. I'm talking about the people on the ground who were at those press conferences yesterday, and I'm sure will be there today, are very much working on a bipartisan solution to this issue, which is rather nice to see, and it's sad that it's so rare.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was very, you know, I felt so much for that colonel who had to share the news that they're going to suspend the active search. It's like, you know, to have to be the person who says that takes a really brave and courageous person to have to do that. And to read even about the CEO of the construction company who spent all day, you know, visiting with the families and sort of thinking about just having to deal, you know, we are not going, the mayor and the governor, and yes, you go into these jobs and you know that you're likely going to have to address an emergency, but when that moment comes, how you step up to that, I agree with you, Joe. It has been impressive, which it should be the norm, right? But we live at a time where it's not the norm. So hopefully that can continue going forward.
And you know, when people say, well, you know, is there anything I can do to help? And even for folks here in the New England, New York area, there are things you can do. When you're traveling through a construction zone, slow down. You know, respect the fact that we have men and women who are working on our infrastructure. It's a dirty, dangerous job to begin with. And there are small things that we can do every day to just help them get home safely. Mm-hmm. So as you start to think about this and you start to think about the tragedy and the loss and think, okay, well, what can I do? Just slow down and respect the people who are working on the roads.
We have to go to a break, and I want to go to a lot of letters that we have. But before, Bob, there has been much made about the May Day call and that what that did. To me, I the only thing, and I'm obviously thrilled that it saved lives and was implemented so quickly, but is that standard procedure, or should be, correct?
Yes. Yeah, in a situation like that, that is standard procedure. With that said, though, I think a certain salute to both the wisdom of the pilots, the local pilots, and then the responders on the ground that were able to react as quickly as they were. Again, remember, Joe, it's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of the dark times of the night, and to be able to respond that quickly is really a credit to, you know, Maryland State Police. And
1.5 yeah. minutes, they had closed off the bridge.
Think about those numbers.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's pause there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Bob Griffin, Jim Henler, Kristen Van Genhoven, plus your letters, panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Is that old teddy bear? Come and get it. That you won for me at the State Fair. Here's some old Valentine.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. I want to go to letters. Brad writes, I see the opportunity for a moonshot style response to this terrible tragedy. The Biden administration can convene the best and brightest civil engineers in a war room approach to a new resilient bridge design. It could be modeled and designed, completed within 2 to 3 months, and then an army of construction workers mobilized to erect a modular style crossing in less than a year. If done right, it could even be completed by this fall. Let's get to work.
I think that's a little optimistic, but I like the idea, and this is where I think work that's already being done in places like the Golden Gate Bridge, which they're doing an awful lot of re-engineering for because of changes in the sciences around seismic activity, can be brought to play. So this isn't going to just be a whole cloth, and I mean brand new, but at the same time, you know, my push would be to let's make sure we're building it back, you know, safer and better for, you know, for, you know, just don't put up the same issues. Right. Let's make sure we take a little bit of time and get it right at the same point saying, what can we put up on a temporary basis to get some of the traffic flowing?
John writes, whoa. Okay. The panel members mention of bumpers for marine bridge columns or piers to protect the bridge from contact by container ships is not reasonable. The mass required to deflect the dolly at her speed of 8 knots with her gross tonnage and the heading that she had would have to have been an island of considerable size and weight.
Yes.
The quote-unquote bumpers in use on other bridges only protect the bridges from much smaller marine vessels. These are also called fenders.
Yes, and I think I'm the one who mentioned that, and I mentioned it in the context of the media finding all these ways to try to find fault or find blame or figure out why this happened. And then to Bob's point, it wouldn't have been possible regardless. So hopefully that clarifies. I agree with the reader. It would not have been possible. And it wasn't part of the constructing package when this bridge was built, right, Bob?
No, it wasn't. But it's also the size of the ship has changed. The container ship is so massive. The dolly is so massive compared to what the average size of container ships were in the 60s and 70s that you're right. I mean,
it wouldn't have made any difference.
Right.
But in those first hours after a disaster like this, the media is scrambling to find things to put onto their front pages to bring people to their sites. And so they're grabbing onto whatever they're hearing about. And very early in this disaster, they were hearing about fenders. And so that's what everybody was learning about in the first few hours of this disaster.
Let's go to other.
And Joe, if you could engineer the bridge to have a bumper that could handle a ship size, you couldn't afford it.
Right.
You know that it would make it so cost prohibitive
because you would need them all the way along. Span of the bridge.
You know, going back to the letter writer, where the letter is correct, is like you'd basically have to build an island around it, which would then sort of make it so that that ships actually couldn't even get into the harbor. So,
Joe, I'd also like to just quickly point out that this is not a new problem, and we've been doing a lot of work over many years. You know, for reasons that I can't talk too much about, but obviously having to do with Rensselaer's 200th anniversary and the fact that one of our famous alums designed the Brooklyn Bridge. I've been learning a lot about the Brooklyn Bridge lately. And, you know, it turns out there were issues of shoddy materials, there were issues, things like that. But the amazing thing, okay, is we're talking about a bridge that's now has a million cars a day going over it that was designed at a time where the weight load expected was hundreds of horse-drawn vehicles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so upgrading, constant changing, things like that have been absolutely crucial to so much of our infrastructure. And then we started having these fights over the funding. We started having these fights over things like that. And so as you say, you know, we're responding now to new research, but
Do we know that when bridges are being built around the world, like are the engineers and the folks working on that, they must be in communication with the shipping companies and they must be up to date on what the weight of these ships are, what's happening in the growth of the shipping world. Like those two worlds must be working in collaboration, right? One would think.
Yes and no. You know, are they aware of it? Yes, is when they're putting designs in front of the final policymakers. I think probably cost drives a lot of these issues because again, there are so many infrastructure needs, and the repair of this bridge is going to be really expensive. And one thing that Secretary Buttigieg said today, which I actually fully subscribe to, is He said that we need to get started now, and then there was some pushback from the person who's interviewing him saying, well, why should the taxpayers be on the hook for this? And his response was, That's something that we can resolve later through the courts, but we can't wait for the courts in the investigation in order to get this started. And I think that's where the federal government is going to have to step in, and they're going to have to open they're going to have to open their pocketbooks.
And I was nervous.
This is what we pay taxes for, is to have that infrastructure.
Well, and that's what I was just going to say. I was afraid to bring the big T word into the conversation because I have learned in my, whatever it is now, 15 years in America, like, you know, big T taxes is like a big dirty word here. And having, obviously, every time I'm on here, having come from Canada, having lived in Europe, I see the benefit of what is accomplished when higher taxes are paid, how we make that back in infrastructure, in saved lives, in efficiency of travel, in health benefit, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But like that is going to be the sticking point here, right? It's everyone wants better bridges, but nobody wants to pay more taxes for them. Everybody wants more, you know, better care around health, but nobody wants to pay for it. Everybody wants free school, but nobody wants to. So this is constantly going to be where the tension is. And at the moment, none of that tension is productive because the culture around taxes in America is very much is so stuck in like paying the lowest taxes possible. And there hasn't been any effective education or information campaigns to revise that cultural belief around taxes and why that's the case. And, you know, we're not going to solve that in our lifetimes.
No, but we should call out a little bit of hypocrisy, though, from our congressional leadership, even in the region of New York that we're in. We've got people who voted against the infrastructure bill. Now, they're quick enough to claim credit for when the infrastructure money is going into their district. But they, you know, to me, it's like if you vote against it, you shouldn't claim credit for it.
Yes.
Yeah, agreed. If you don't vote, you can't complain about the leadership, right? It's like you have to be involved to be able to hold anyone accountable or take any credit.
Let's go to more letters from Joe, because it's Joe Day.
It is Joe Day. Every day is Joe Day, but today is a special Joe Day.
All of our letter writers will be named Joe as well. Joe says the port pilot released the tugboats after they reached the USS Savannah and started accelerating. There is no requirement to have a tugboat shadowing a ship. A tugboat could have bumped the ship into alignment. There's also no requirement to have the ship's bow thrusters hooked up to an emergency generator. Going forward, doesn't it make sense to prevent similar occurrences?
Excellent letter. I assume that there's going to be some operational changes coming out of this. And given what we've just seen, I think those are two suggestions that would be high on my list that I would expect to see from NTSB and the Coast Guard.
Yeah, I agree.
We go to Marianne. It seems to me in the case of cargo ships, the tail is wagging the dog. Shipping companies have increased the size of their ships for the last 50 years and probably more. Regardless of the size of the ports, the shipping companies are forcing countries to build even bigger ports.
You know, I think that's a much more complex situation than it sounds. Part of the reason these containers are getting bigger is, first of all, the more stuff you can put on a single ship, it not only saves money, but there's also environmental impacts to that. I mean, a very large ship carrying a lot of stuff actually is less polluting than 20 ships carrying 1/20th of the load. A lot of the issues that have to do with the steerage of these and the tugboats and the things like that get into issues of who's paying what and where and things like that. So I do agree that the shipping companies do have to think about this. By the way, there's also a lot of insurance companies involved. I mean, this is not a trivial thing. This is manufacturers. This is, you know, the boat builders, this is the insurers, this is the transportation industry, these are the people taking it in. And the harbors that are willing to take these boats are doing it willingly. It's not like Los Angeles or Long Beach is forced to get bigger, but rather Long Beach says, great, we can take these bigger ships. That'll bring more stuff here. That'll be more hiring in our area. So it's a very complex piece of our overall infrastructure. That said, it definitely is something that needs to be viewed more holistically.
Yeah, and if we can pull a curtain back on this just a little bit, because I think people should understand where the goods that are on the shelves that we buy come from.
Can you pull the curtain back in a minute?
I can. there's a global port war going on right now because a lot of the ports can't handle this. So in a situation like Long Beach and SeaTac up in Seattle, you know, what was part of the work that I was doing on this is how do we deal with the homeland security implications of fewer ports being able to handle these type of ships.
We have some great letters I want to get to on the other side, and then we'll move on to other topics, I promise. Our group this morning, Jim Henler, Bob Griffin, and Kristen Van Ginhoven, a terrific group. We welcome you as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue the fun and frivolity with when we return after news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Again, hearing the music of Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. Martha is going to be getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame today. No better thing to celebrate other than Joe Day, of course.
Except Joe Day, and, right, yes.
And World Theater Day.
And World Theater. I'm sorry. That was mean. I'm sorry. I did mean to include that, Chris.
I'm just the only one we're not going to celebrate.
Yeah, you got to figure, come up with something, Jim. Again, you can see the playlist, WAMC.org/roundtable. WAMC.org/roundtable, and we'd love for you to always check that out and see what we're playing. I know people get into the music as well they should. We've got a great group of folks who work on that, so take a look and see what you're listening to. I want to get to a couple of the letters. I do want to move on to other topics, but there's some of these letters that I think are really important and things that we have not addressed straight right on. Head on. So I would like to talk about those, as it were. Thank you.
Joe, can I interrupt for just 1 second? I do want to say today is National Pokemon Day.
There you go.
So there's one that
there
I can relate to.
Isn't every day Pokemon Day?
Every day is some kind of day because yeah. Bob always comes in with whatever the day is today.
Constantly fascinated by it.
So Tom writes, this is for all the geniuses out there who complain about why the military hardware costs so much. I wonder how many geniuses during the budget meetings to build the Francis Scott Key Bridge were complaining about the cost and decided that they didn't need any reinforced barriers around the supports. Well, there's nothing to indicate that that was the case at that time or even now in the sense of that they were following the procedures of the time.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you go back and you look at the planning cycle for the bridge, it probably started in the early 60s, you know, to think about how long it takes to build a structure like this.
So this is another letter from Gus. It's not another letter from Gus. It's another letter that comes in that is very similar to many that we have gotten this morning, which asks, I'm not hearing any mention of the cars that were on the bridge and the people that were in them. What do we know about that? We talked about this yesterday on the program in that the initial reports were that sonar and other operations saw that there were vehicles in the water. I don't know where that stands.
So my understanding, and this again is all secondhand, where they're still working all this out. But originally they reported that some vehicles had gone down. Now the belief is that those vehicles were the ones that were supporting the construction crew and were
That's
not
right.
actually people going over bridge, that the police had managed to stop vehicles in both directions and there was enough time that the vehicles did get off the bridge.
Yeah, as far as we understand, there was no traffic on the bridge. There was only the construction vehicles and the construction workers who were just about to be evacuated when the bridge did collapse. So there was not quite enough time. But I was surprised and it did make me wonder, like, where are the interviews with the folks who were just off the bridge, because there had to have been some vehicles who like narrowly escaped. And it's surprising, given the media cycle that we get in this country, unless I've missed it. But I don't recall any interviews with folks who were just off the bridge or just about to go on the bridge and, you know, narrowly escaping being part of that disaster.
Well, if it was me, I'd still be in a bar, so I could appreciate anybody.
I mean, I'm sure, sadly, given the timing of the incident and the, as all of us have said, the relatively fast response, my guess would be that, I know officials are going to be interviewing those that were on the ship today, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they're also going to be interviewing the other people as well, probably putting a collar on them before they spring them loose to the media.
And it was 1:30 in the morning, so maybe there were some people who don't want to be discovered about why they were out that late for whatever reason. But
there's
who
always
knows?
That.
Who knows?
Around Washington, D.C., please stop being jaded.
Just out fishing.
I'm on my way to the Appalachian Trail right now.
You know, and I was chatting with my boyfriend the other day because I have a phobia of bridges. Every time I go over a bridge, I'm really quite nervous. I don't quite white knuckle it, but I'm pretty close.
I'm not a big bridge fan.
And now I'm like, you know, man, lots of images of what happened there, and just feeling so much sadness and empathy for the families of those workers.
I'm not a big bridge fan in the sense of going over the mic, because I do, you know, I always feel like, oh, you know, there's water underneath, and oh, look, I can see it. Mm-hmm. And that, I find that bothersome. But the having been born and brought up for a portion of my life in outside of Maryland, in Maryland, born in D.C., but lived in Maryland, you know, that Francis Scott Key Bridge was the bridge.
It was very much
an iconic, beautiful structure that we always looked at as a part of our background in our city. So not to have it there is really quite devastating. Yeah. One more letter and then we'll move on to other things. Shelley says, two of the six people who are all believed to be construction workers are from Guatemala. A father of three from El Salvador has been identified as one of the missing workers. Mexican nationals are also among the victims. This is also a conversation about immigration and how our immigrants do the invisible work that others do not want to do.
100%. Yes. Yep. Thank you for writing that letter. And I imagine in the coming days there'll be more conversation on the panel about that once there's more known about them.
It's also a reflection, Joe, of how difficult it is to actually do even minor repairs on critical infrastructure, because we as a population have zero patience for anything that would be affecting our commutes in the morning. So you know, the reason these crews are out at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, you know, Sunday to Monday morning, I guess it would be Monday morning at 1 o'clock, is because it's the only time that they can fill in the potholes. And as much as people push back against the idea of their commute being affected because of construction, they hate worse is what they hate worse is potholes. You know, so the idea of what it takes to keep everything running is ignored.
All right, let's move on to other topics on this Wednesday morning. I have to check.
Yes.
Wednesday morning. We want to talk about what the Supreme Court did yesterday in regards to the abortion pill. No action taken, but they did hear the case yesterday, and what we could tell from, I think, looking at both Supreme Court scholars as well as the justices themselves, and what we heard is that the Supreme Court seemed unlikely to limit access to the abortion pill, a key medication that is used in more than 60% of U.S. abortions, and has emerged as the next front in the battle over how and whether women can terminate their pregnancies. During nearly 2 hours of oral argument, a majority of justices from across the ideological spectrum expressed skepticism that the anti-abortion doctors challenging the Food and Drug Administration's loosening of regulations for the long-approved medication have suffered the type of direct harm that would give them sufficient legal grounds to bring the lawsuit. The Biden administration and the drugs manufacturer urge the justices to reverse a lower court ruling that would make it more difficult to access the drug in a case that centers on the role of government agencies in regulating medicine and returns the issue of abortion to the high court less than 2 years after the conservative majority overturned Roe v. Wade.
Well, one wonders, in a way, how this ever even made it to the Supreme Court until, you know, you see that the lower appeals court where this happened was in Texas by a judge who is notably pro-life and used very pro-life language in the, ruling that he had. I went down the rabbit hole last night of, Erin Hawley being the wife of Josh Hawley and all of this making even more sense. I'm
or less sense.
Sense, but it is just continually astonishing when women are the ones who are wanting this to be illegal by any means, right? Where they don't want any access to abortion in any way. They don't show any understanding of the life-saving times when a termination is necessary. They don't have any recognition of reproductive justice, reproductive health, all of the different variables about when a termination might be necessary. The health of a whole family, let's expand it, not even the woman. I mean, apparently, the alternative plan that providers have if this gets upheld is going to cause women more cramping, more bleeding, because they would only be able to take one pill. So, I mean, the whole thing that they're reaching for the Comstock Act, they're reaching. But it is, we cannot take it for granted that it's not going to be upheld. I mean, we're all hopeful, I guess, based on, what experts are surmising from yesterday's hearing. But the folks that are anti-abortion are obviously not going to give up. And the only thing that that I hope for, and I know that many other people hope for, is that this can be, and you can see the Biden administration really leaning on it, this can finally be an issue that will sway a national election. It has never been one in the past. And we're hopeful that the young people, the many families in the middle America who have literally and all over the country in, the 25 plus states that have put bans on different things around reproductive health, are feeling the day-to-day effects of this and are actually going to get out and vote for, the president said it in the State of the Union, if you give me a Democratic Congress and a Democratic Senate, I will make Roe v. Wade the law of the land, and this can just go away. Well, it's never going to go away. You're always going to have anti-abortion activists out there. So there's so much to say, but it just continues to be astonishing to me, primarily that there are so many women out there who just refuse or are blind to how this affects all of the other folks of their same gender and anyone who can carry, have pregnancies, that can have all kinds of issues. There are all kinds of reasons why people would require a termination. And it's bringing it to the forefront. People are hearing it. And that is the only positive thing that's coming out of this.
So can I just real quick, one thing that I would like to point out, and that is, the other big story I think that came on basically the same day is that Marilyn Lanz, who is a Democrat and ran on the issue of abortion and IBF in Alabama, a Democrat, won.
Right. And we're seeing that.
And it is it's a special election. And it was a victory where people came out, and that was the issue she was campaigning on. And I can't see the Republicans looking at that and thinking, Okay.
No, yeah, I mean, one more thing before the other panelists jump in. It's like those of us in 2016 who were campaigning for Hillary Clinton, regardless of our views about her, we were doing it because we knew what was going to happen in the Supreme Court. Most of America did not take that seriously or was not consciously aware of what was at stake. Roe v. Wade getting overturned was this enormous victory for the anti-abortionists who'd been working for 50 years towards it. If we, you know, in my hopeful self, I think ultimately maybe that's actually going to result in people stepping up and making change that it should have been done. You know, all of the folks who can talk about the things about Roe v. Wade that did have complications, maybe this can actually get rectified going forward if folks vote.
My concern about the, and Joe, I'm glad you raised the Alabama election. It was a district that narrowly, by Alabama standards, voted for Trump. I think he won only by 1%, and and the population voting in yesterday's election was only about 6,000. So I don't want to make it sound like there's hope that Alabama has seen the light. I don't believe that. I have a couple of points that I want to sort of go further on. I looked up what the Comstock Act is because, unlike a lot of folks who are probably listening, I'm not up on my 1870s legislation as much as I should be.
Well, but then you're out.
Yeah. But the Comstock Act was approved in 1873 under Ulysses S. Grant. So let's sort of set that stage. And basically what the law says is it's illegal to mail obscene materials. And I raise this, and I'm going to tell you what those obscene materials are, because Alito and Clarence Thomas are using this, and I believe this is going to be a wedge that they are going to continue to use.
Yes.
Okay, that this is not the end. And I would also note that the position being taken by Alito, Thomas, and others, and even the majority of the Supreme Court argument, is completely out of step with 60% of what Americans believe.
Yes.
But the Comstock Act made it illegal to mail what they called obscene materials that include contraceptives, substances that induce abortion, pornography, sex toys, I mean, talk about the no fun party, in any written materials about any of these items. Okay, so when they're dusting off the Comstock Act, understand that this isn't just the question of abortion or reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. This gets into a fundamental attack on the Griswold case and the idea of open access to contraceptives. So this is the push by the theocracy, that minority group, that incestuous group in D.C. that includes people like Holly and others that are making, in my mind, a very dangerous grasp at fundamentally turning back our fundamental freedoms. And honestly, they really don't care about what the majority of us believe, because to them, this is the way that the rest of us should all have to live our lives.
So, Jim Enlard, yes.
Yeah, let me go back to the actual, you know, what happened yesterday. See, I think the interesting thing about it is one of the things that this court has been looking for is excuses to weaken federal agencies.
Yeah.
But I think using this case to do it would have been very, very difficult because it was such a ridiculous case. Seven doctors, I believe three of whom were dentists.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So took it. None of them have... So they all have the right legally to say, I'm not going to treat a case that goes against my religious beliefs. So the argument that the lawyer had to make was, if someone comes in and this has caused an emergency in the ER and the doctor is called down, they will have to make the decision in too short a time. You know, and that will cause them emotional distress. That was their argument, right? That's the thing. So it does leave the court And if I had to make a prediction, which, you know, I'm not so good at with this court, but my guess is what we're going to see is a ruling that says we are simply ruling that this case, there wasn't standing. And, you know, we'll wait for the case to come back again with some stronger arguments behind it, preferably from a court that's a little less likely to accept ridiculous arguments. So that's where a Comstock thing could come in. That's where something else could come in. And I think that's what we're, you know, most likely to see happen is that this was a case that should never have reached pass. Judge, the other thing is, for those of you who've heard about judge shopping and the rules they're trying to put in to prevent judge shopping, this is a perfect case of it. It was, they purposely brought this case in a jurisdiction that had a random selection of judges, as all do, except it only has one judge.
Right.
Right. So your random selection is 100%.
Right.
It then goes to an appeals circuit, which is known as the most conservative circuit in the country. So many of the seemingly crazy rulings we've heard coming out of some of this has been this particular judge and that particular appeal circuit. And the problem is, once an appeals circuit says something ridiculous, it has to go to the Supreme Court if it's going to get thrown out.
Well, that's why it's really was great to hear, like, Justice Jackson and other ones, and even Justice Coney Barrett, saying along the lines of...
You mean the women?
The women! I know. It was a very different discussion, right? I went down that rabbit hole as well, like having two female lawyers and four female justices in the conversation that could be had, which makes it even more ironic that the two people who seem to be the most wanting to support it, Alito and Thomas, anyway, right? It's like, those of us who have been fighting this for so long, just kind of, God. But to hear the women saying things like, so because this, in this very minute possibility that this emergency room doctor comes down, et cetera, and is unable to, like, put their moral objection and go through the hospital procedures for having that moral objection and getting an exception made, you want nobody in the country to be able to have access to this for that one very, you know, rare possibility. And I agree with everything you're saying, Jim, because it puts the FDA regulations and all of that. They have to kick the can down the road. They really do.
Let's not forgive, though, the fact that the Chief Justice and a majority of the court decided that this was worthy of being heard.
Yeah.
Okay, given the fact that the rest of us, just normal people, are sitting here going, this is really stupid. You know, this shouldn't...
But understand that I think this is a case, I hope this is a case, where they heard it because they knew it, they wanted to overturn that particular
justification. But where does this optimism come from, given the illegitimacy of this court? Given everything that this court has done, where is that optimism coming from?
Well, my cynical self thinks it's because they know what they did by overturning Roe, and they're trying to regain some face by showing...
Right before the presidential election, maybe?
My cynical side says what they're really waiting for is a stronger case.
Yeah.
Because this case would not have said anything about how the FDA made the ruling. This case would not have weakened federal regulatory authority. It would have said, you know, something very bizarre. By the way, some people who listen to the show know I'm quite a data geek. I actually looked up some of the numbers. Just so you know, you're more likely to go into the emergency room with a drug-induced problem.
Aneurysm from the Supreme Court decision?
From ibuprofen. Other very, very common things.
I was about to defend you and say, no, that's not geeky. That's just normal. And then you said that, and I was like, well, that's pretty geeky.
I watch the clock tick down to the break, it does bear repeating that it is continues to be astonishing how much conversation in this country is about abortion rather than sexual health education.
Yes.
It's just astonishing why we're not talking about healthy relationships, sexual health education, you know, and moving that conversation along in a bipartisan way rather than talking about abortion.
All right. Kudos to Kristen for watching the clock. We thank you. We will be back in just a moment to finish up and move on to other topics. We have a few that I want to get to and hear from our panelists, Kristen, Jim, and Bob. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Last call on this Wednesday morning. We'll be back right after BBC. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our last call for letters and for your thoughts to be shared with the group. Let me see. I want to move on to other stories, and we have been discussing all kinds of different subjects. I want to get back to something that we talked about yesterday, and the story has changed since yesterday. And so why not talk about it? For those of you who are friends of the Peacock Network, Ronna McDaniel is no longer a member. She is no longer an employee of the National Broadcasting Corporation. To great fanfare last Friday, Ronna McDaniel, the former head of the RNC, was hired. She went to the minute she left the RNC job, she got a really high-powered agent at CAA and then picked up this gig, $300,000 a year at NBC, to offer her thoughts on what was happening.
We get way more than that to be panelists on this.
Yeah.
WAMC.
I mean, sometimes, like, you get water. So
We get water?
I know. More than voters in Georgia. So Ronna McDaniel goes on in what NBC said was a pre, not a, not part of her contract, but a soft launch. It was an interview that had already been scheduled, a pre-scheduled interview to be on to talk about the state of the party, and she was on with Kristen Welker of Meet the Press, and the interview went, you know, about what you would expect with an interview with Ronna McDaniel and Kristen Welker. Well, then they go over to the panel section, and Chuck Todd just loses his bow tie. He is apoplectic that his network would stoop so low. Then many other stars of NBC, including Rachel Maddow, said, mm-hmm. "No way. This is a person who does not believe that that Joe Biden is the legitimate president. This is a person who has tried to go to court and to really be very as far as the election, suppress the election and turnout. And this is not someone you want on your airwaves." So by noon, I don't know if she had anything in her desk, but she was asked to pack up and leave, and she did. So that was interesting, I think, on a couple of fronts. First of all, of the role that the talent plays in deciding who stays and who goes and who they're comfortable with and who they're not comfortable with, and also the fact that, and this is where I struggle. I will admit, this is where I struggle. Because I said this yesterday on the show. I was hoping that we would not see her be fired. And here's the reason. You are, yes, for all of the reasons that you believe she should be fired, I agree with. However, you were also, and maybe it's just because of my closeness to running a talk show, whenever you have a conservative name, people say, okay, well, we don't want that kind of conservative. We don't want that kind of MAGA Republican. We don't want that kind of person on. And to have someone that truly represents what is going on, and also I would argue in a, and not so much in a, look, she was a sycophant, but not, she did have her brawls with him, which is why she left the job and it was given to his family member. So, that is the case right now. I can't see another network picking her up, other than Fox, right?
It depends if Fox wants to poke it at Trump or not, I think. But
I actually think another network is going to pick her up for the very reasons that you're talking about. I really do. I appreciate everything you've shared, because there was going to, like, the intention was, we're in an election year. We want to have a lot of different perspectives. We want to bring in the voices of our country to reflect on what's going on this year. And there's two things that came out of it. One, like you said, you saw the power of a bunch of people. Like, one voice is never enough, but a bunch of powerful voices coming together, they force change to happen. Right. The other thing is that it brings up this conversation of, like, she's not OK as a, I mean, I'll be very curious if we'll get a bunch of letters, but, you know, she's too much of the not kind of conservative whose viewpoint we want to have during this election year, when actually many people in this country agree with her. So don't we
well,
want
right.
to hear that?
And that, and you're absolutely right. And that was my point, too. It's not, we're not talking about the fringe here. We're talking about the leading candidate
Correct.
For the president of the United States, of someone who has backed that agenda while he was president, while he was not president, and leading up to his reelection effort. Bob.
Well, except, you know, what she's done on being recorded, you know, her personal attempts to overturn the election, I thought made her completely unfit to be on the air. And it's not so much the idea that you don't want to hear from other voices, but I think she did enough to disqualify herself that I thought it was an incredibly poor choice on their part.
Are there no other commentators who also were vocal about the election in that way?
So,
well, would you put Carrie Lake on?
You know, I feel like I'm in the camp of Joe on the day of Joe, where I'm like, if you've got some, it's difficult.
Oh no, don't put me as an anti-Joe guy today. I'm a pro Joe guy, but I don't.
You know,
I disagree with.
I'm not sure where I land on it, to be honest. So I don't want to say I'm in one camp or the other, but I do think there is value, especially in an election year, especially if you're trying to make the media have a bunch of different perspectives.
Right. And look at how they use them. I mean, typically how they will use somebody like Corey Lewandowski, who became a CNN CNN commentator for a while. They put him on. They have a panel of maybe 10 people. There's 9 liberals and there's the one conservative. And he just gets
familiar.
Just gets right. Exactly. he just gets beat up for 2.5 hours. So I don't know if the worry is, oh, this person is going to have a legitimate impact and talk to people, and they're going to say, oh, she makes perfect sense. I just think they're using her as a foil.
So,
yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Joe. You know, this one tears me apart. And, you know, I've mentioned this in the past, right? My dad got kicked out of the New York Civil Liberties Union, where he had been very influential, for backing the right of the Nazis to march in Skokie, for those of you who remember many years ago. And his rationale was always, you know, any law that will let us kick them out keep them out means that when someone else takes power, they'll have the ability to kick us out. So I feel this is some of that same thing. On the other hand, I think the loss of objectivity in the news, I think the fact that, you know, many nights when something's breaking, you know, I watch both MSNBC and Fox.
Correct.
And I swear I'm living in two different countries.
You are.
And the problem, though, is if you bring a you know, it wasn't clear exactly what she was hired for, but it sounded like they were talking about more of somebody who would lead a show, not just someone who would be on panels, right? So that changes things a little bit for me, right? One is an employment contract long term. The other is inviting someone to come in and be a commentator.
My question is, what is her severance package, or what is her paycheck for 4 days of employment?
I mean, give her the $300,000 and say goodbye, I would think.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It'd be interesting to see how that comes out, because there is a difference if she is being brought on to kind of share her opinion, such as it is. But last night I was thinking, like, are we just going to have the Mitt Romneys of the world be our commentators on all of the... You know, are we never going to hear the voices in our mainstream media of the people that are backing the candidate? I mean, you watch the Republican National Convention, you watch the Democratic National Convention, you are in two completely different countries. So how are we going to get people? We hear so many people saying, I can't believe people believe that's true, but because they're not hearing it. So if you could bring that more to the mainstream media, would we understand?
But again, on a panel like this, having two of us on one side, two of us on the other side, and debating, it makes sense to me. Saying we're going to have, you know, somebody who's the lead of this or who's going to have a whole show, that starts to become a lot more than just giving someone a platform.
And by the way, my thoughts of this have morphed, because when the network, NBC, gave an hour to Megyn Kelly, my soul fell apart.
And I think mm-hmm. that she is so morally compromised, and I don't have a problem with holding people accountable for their bad behavior. I don't think it should have been. I don't think that what she's done should have been rewarded.
This is a bigger question about what's our line, right? So an election denier or somebody who has morally reprehensible behavior like she does is not somebody that we want to pay large amounts of money to hear from. But when it comes to a different thing where somebody is morally reprehensible about a different subject, we have no problem putting them
but
up
you have,
there.
You have the Democrats and you have the Republicans, you have Joe Biden and you have Trump. And according to the polls, their guy's winning.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
So to not have that viewpoint that at this moment, and it will change, it could one way or the other, it could change. But to not have that viewpoint articulated in some way, shape, or form, in maybe the most batty way possible, I don't know what that necessarily hurts.
I think until we can return some norms that telling the truth is something that's going to be supported in
But we don't have those norms in our country for other things.
We need them. I mean, this is part of the problem.
And we do,
so if you say Mitt Romney, I would listen to Mitt Romney. I don't agree with a lot of what he says, but at the same time, I believe he's a man of integrity, and I believe Ronald McDonald isn't.
Yeah.
All right, I think we have 2 minutes, just a couple of letters that we'll go through here. Ronna McDaniel is unfit to be on the air. Complicity in insurrection is beyond the pale. It is unacceptable. Then Polly says, representing a political party is one thing, supporting an insurrection is another. She was a public traitor. Look, Joe, Biden is president. He's been president since the election 3.5 years ago. Nothing has been brought to light to alter that reality. The media, yourself included, Joe, has really bent over backwards to ensure they listen to both sides. And I put both sides in parentheses because there's nothing accurate or provable that would come out of the mouth of Ronna McDaniel. I don't disagree with that, by the way. We all know that it would be like getting Alex Jones on the NBC network as a paid commentator. Really? This is going to be way too much. And Irene said, time to stop inviting and paying people to tell lies about the election of President Biden. We are in a very critical time. Our liberties, our country's credibility are on the line. We don't need to condone lies in the media. And I was trying to find one that was in support, and I didn't find a letter. So just end there, I guess. My thanks to the whole group this morning. You're wonderful, as always. Jim Handler. Jim, your official title is?
I'm the director of the Future of Computing Research Collaboration.
Okay.
A renaming.
We'll get it right next time, I promise. Bob Griffin is with us, as always. Thank you.
Happy Joe Day.
Really, thank you, and good to see you, Kristen, as always. We'll be back right after this.